Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Friday, the 5th of March, 2021. I'm Joe Bicknicki with the local news. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will be taking its final vote on a reduction in fees for the pool and gym and hear numerous updates at their first regular meeting of the month that comes up on Monday. It's the third and final reading of an ordinance that would change the membership and day pass fees for the community center. The proposal would eliminate those fees for anyone under 18 to use the gym and pool. It would also get rid of extra charges for people who are not residents of the borough. Fees for seniors would actually go up under the ordinance, but those could be reduced by volunteer work. Borough staff say they don't know the impact of the proposal on revenue for the Parks and Recreation Department, but want to encourage use of that facility after a year of frequent closures there. The Assembly Monday also will vote on a new ordinance that makes some housekeeping changes to local code for Mountain View Manor. There's also a resolution that would allow the borough to apply for state grant funding for COVID-19 testing and vaccine distribution. Also on the agenda is the borough's input on the first of several expected state decisions on the land entitlement for the local government. Department of Natural Resources has identified around 1,400 acres of state land in the area that could be transferred to the borough. Ultimately, the municipal government is in line to receive about 10 times that amount, and additional decisions on those lands are expected from the state in the future. The Assembly will consider a draft budget policy for the borough as staff prepare a spending plan for the fiscal year that starts in July. There's also a letter of support for Working Against Violence for Everyone. WAVE is applying for a grant to provide transitional housing for victims of domestic violence. And the Assembly will be hearing updates on the Emergency Operations Center, Petersburg Medical Center, Southeast Alaska Power Agency, and a Sea Otter Working Group. The meeting starts at noon Monday, and it will be by teleconference. You can testify by calling in toll-free at the beginning of the meeting, that number, 1-800-954-0633. KFSK will broadcast Monday's meeting live. Petersburg's Emergency Operations Center reported two more COVID-19 cases yesterday and an additional case from the day before. However, the community's active case count was dropped to 60, reflecting 10 COVID-positive people who've been released from isolation by public health. That's a change in how those cases are being reported instead of calling those recovered. Petersburg Medical Center is providing home health care for over 10 infected people, and no one remains hospitalized. The medical center has vaccine clinics today and next Friday for people on the waiting list and who have appointments. They expect to be giving around 450 second doses today. Some drive-through shots are also being administered for people who've been instructed to quarantine. The clinic for next Friday, March 12th, will be for first doses, and medical center staff are encouraging anyone 16 and older who wants a shot to sign up for the waiting list. Here's Chief Nursing Officer Jennifer Briner on PMC Live yesterday.
We have the vaccine that we need if people want a shot. So anybody that wants a shot should not feel like they're cutting in line or taking it from somebody who needs it. We will be able to get enough vaccine for people who want it. So we want people to sign up.
And online that can be done at pmcak.org or by calling 772-5545. Petersburg School District has announced it will be continuing with remote online learning through next week. Schools have been closed to in-person classes since February 23rd. And there's a week off for spring break that starts up next Friday, March 12th. That means students won't be returning to classrooms until March 22nd at the earliest. We'll hear more on the COVID-19 response here in Petersburg and the latest outbreak coming up at 12:30 today on the COVID panel discussion. Petersburg Medical Center has come out with more information about a medical records breach impacting about 200 patients. The community hospital announced Monday one of its employees had viewed records for patients not under their care. KFSK's Angela Denning has more on that story.
Petersburg Medical Center's CEO, Phil Hofstetter, talked about the incident on a KFSK radio show Thursday.
On behalf of PMC, I apologize.
The medical center sent out letters to all patients whose medical records may have been viewed by this employee. So how did they find out about it in the first place? Hofstetter says another employee reported it, which is encouraged through the HIPAA training everyone gets at PMC. HIPAA is a federal law which stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Both HIPAA and PMC have a rule that if an employee suspects another employee has violated HIPAA, including improperly accessing a confidential medical record, that employee has a duty to report the potential violation to PMC's compliance office.
An internal investigation was launched, and the employee in question was kept away from records during that time. PMC also filed the incident with the Office of Civil Rights, which they are required to do. The letters sent out to patients detailed the dates the medical records were viewed. Some of those dates went back 2 and 3 years. So how could someone view records that long ago, but PMC not know about it until the end of February? Hofstetter says they didn't know about some of them until they started digging through the computer system. They looked back through the years that the employee could have had access to records. Everything viewed is stamped in time. Hofstetter says the information was viewed, but there is no evidence that it was stored, copied, or shared.
All of the facts point to the information being viewed briefly.
Under HIPAA, this type of violation is called curiosity lookups. PMC trains all employees that it's not permitted. Hofstetter says they have no reason to believe the breach went beyond their hospital. He says identity theft is very unlikely, and billings and financial records are kept separate from the medical records.
The investigation found nothing to indicate that patient billing or financial records were viewed.
Once it was proved that the employee had inappropriately viewed medical records, the person was terminated and is no longer working at PMC. Hofstetter says HIPAA only requires a press release if there are 500 or more people affected by a breach, but they announced it anyway for transparency reasons. He says they cannot release the name of the employee who was part of the breach because of confidentiality laws PMC is under. Moving forward, this type of thing should be less likely. The medical center has purchased a new electronic health record system, which Hofstetter says will have more safeguards in place, including a compliance module that could help indicate improper viewing of records. They expect to begin the process of transferring to that new system by the end of March and have it up and running by the end of November. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Alaska is preparing for its first elections under a new system approved by voters last year. As Eric Stone reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, experts who have experience with the system Alaska is implementing have some advice for election administrators: educate and test.
The passage of Ballot Measure 2 made two big changes to the way Alaskans cast ballots in state and federal elections. First, it did away with party primary elections and replaced them with a single multi-party primary. The top four vote-getters in what some are calling the Tundra primary will advance to the general election in November. And that's where the other big change comes in: ranked choice voting. Voters in the state of Maine started using the system for federal elections back in 2018, and Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows says educating voters on the new system was critical. She recalls doing some pretty creative outreach to teach folks how the system worked.
I remember house parties that spring where we would bring different ice cream flavors and bring sample ballots for people to choose. Did they like the chocolate best, vanilla second best, strawberry third best, and then go forth and demonstrate how that tabulation works.
They'd count up everybody's first choice votes, and if more than half the voters listed chocolate as their first choice, that's it. That's the winner. End of election. But if no flavor got more than half of the first place votes, let's say chocolate and vanilla each got 40% and strawberry got 20%, they would go to a second round. Strawberry is in last place, so it's eliminated, and then it's a race between chocolate and vanilla. That means it's time to look at all the strawberry fans' second choices. So if people who voted for strawberry had to choose between chocolate and vanilla, which one would they prefer? To keep things simple, let's imagine that everyone who voted for strawberry listed chocolate as their second choice. All the votes for strawberry would move to chocolate in the second round, and chocolate would win that election with 60% of the vote. Bellows says outreach and education are important, but so is figuring out the best way to translate voters' preferences into votes.
Ballot design is very important it's important that voters be able to understand what their choices are and how to mark their ballot.
Christopher Patton studies exactly that. He's a researcher with the Maryland-based nonprofit Center for Civic Design. I asked him what he thought of Alaska's first prototype ranked choice ballot. It lists candidates for each race with a grid next to it labeled first choice, second choice, and so on. There's also a space for write-in candidates.
Overall, this is a pretty good start on the ballot. I am really excited to see it.
He's a fan of the grid layout. Maine uses that same system.
And we've tested this with quite a few voters, and that this grid system, which you can see on our website, does seem to work the best, and so that is what we recommend.
He says he's glad to see clear instructions up at the top of the ballot, but he suggests a few minor wording changes to reduce how much voters have to read. Patton says it's great that there's also an illustration at the top of the ballot, but he suggests some changes there, too.
What I would suggest is that the illustration shows the hand actually marking on that grid that appears below, and that you show the correct way to do it, and you also show a couple incorrect ways to do it.
While there are some best practices his group recommends, he says there's no substitute for actually testing the ballot on everyday Alaskans in, say, a focus group. Alaska election officials declined interview requests for this story and did not respond to questions about how the state plans to test its ballots. The switch to ranked choice will likely have another effect, a longer wait for results in close races, possibly even longer than last year when Alaska was one of the last states to announce results. State officials warn that when one candidate receives less than 50% of the first choice vote, they won't run the second round of tabulation until 15 days after the election. They say that's to allow time to receive and verify absentee ballots. Patton and Maine Secretary of State Bellows say they both stand ready to answer any questions Alaska election officials have as they gear up for the state's first ranked choice election in November 2022. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
KFSK has an open airwaves policy. We encourage the public to express personal opinions, ideas, and creative works. These pieces are available on our website, kfsk.org, following their scheduled radio broadcast. Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. The following submitted for broadcast by Jeb Morrill.
The following piece is entitled Drama Queen by Annabelle Baker. And I'm reading this today for everybody in town that knew Annabelle, especially my good friend Pat. Drama.
Oops, sorry, that is the wrong piece of sound. I'll be back in just a moment with the right one. Try again here. Again, submitted for broadcast by Jeb Morrow.
It's the second to the last day of the season for processing tanners, and this old-timer, my giller, has me pushing to keep up. At my butcher station, I remove each crab one at a time from the buggy, a large, heavy aluminum bin on wheels, and position the crab just so on the aluminum splitter. While holding the crab by its legs and claws, I push down and through, splitting the crab in two while simultaneously popping off the shell. As I do this, I lean one leg against the pole of the splitter, pinning the crab shell against it while placing the crab's two halves on a large aluminum tray that separates me from my gilling counterpart. I butcher, he gills. Unless, of course, I happen to be gilling, then someone else is butchering. In fact, multiple people are doing both. A row of gilling machines line the front half of the large room, sandwiched between butchering stations and a large conveyor belt that the crab halves are tossed onto after each one is cleaned. I might butcher for a half a day, and then move to a gilling machine that afternoon, then maybe butcher again after dinner. It becomes common for us to move back and forth between the two, and as the season has progressed, our workforce has diminished, making virtually everyone in the line experienced at both. The no-shows after the first couple of days, along with the lack of a large younger crowd in general, becomes one of the many topics for discussion during our scheduled coffee breaks. You know, we tell our kids they can become anything they want, Max Warhatch says to myself and Andy Knight in between sips of coffee. Maybe that was a mistake. He's grinning as he says it because it's funny, but it's kind of funny in a funny but it's true way. At 43, I'm the youngest of this trio, but certainly old enough to take part in the things ain't what they used to be fisherman gossip. You know, with these wages, you'd think we'd see more kids, Andy puts in. Nobody wants to work anymore. It's kind of sad. Andy's referring to the offer that OBI, formerly PFI, put out to entice a 100% local workforce for the tanner season. To avoid nightmarish logistics with travel and COVID and quarantine and all that, the company is paying us $20 an hour, $30 for overtime. It's decent pay, and for better or for worse, there's been plenty of overtime. For Andy, he's hoping the whole thing wraps up soon out of concern for his missus at home. She's one of those people that just can't get it, he says, speaking of COVID and the developing spike in local cases. But I told these guys I would help, so I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. To be fair, there are a few youngsters about. I recognize the Willis kid, and Yancey Nielsen's daughter is here too, along with her posse of a half a dozen or so friends, most maybe 20. They've been assigned to various packing and sorting positions further down the line, and when I ask one of them how they're holding up, she says it's not so bad except for this soreness in her shoulders. Apparently there's a lot of movement and lifting up near the chest for her job. The workload is real, and there's just not much in the way of gravy positions. How these folks do it all summer long like this, many of them women beyond their youth, it just amazes me. Because the work is real. It's like fishing in a way. At our busiest, we're walking in just before 7 a.m., and for those of us that stay to clean up, out after 1 a.m., then again at 7. For multiple days we did this, and for each of those and beyond, I had trouble sleeping. My shoulders were bound tight between my blades each morning, my neck was stiff, my hands swollen, and they ached. And as I would sit on my couch waking up with my first cup of coffee, I'd notice the sensation of my hands uncramping to the heat from my cup, just as they might on the boat. One parallel of many. Another is standing in one place doing the same thing at a time, like long lying. You find your pace, you get in your groove, and then quite often the mind wanders off to a place it'd rather be. Maybe you'll take that trip south you've been thinking about, install that bilge pump in your skiff, brush up on your Spanish, or tackle that honeydew list just as soon as this whole thing is over. Yes, much like the bait shed in that way. From day one, I recognized it. I've joked in the past to fellow crewmen, there are untold million-dollar ideas that have been invented and then just as quickly forgotten on the back deck. My guess is, like back decks everywhere, this cannery has held its fair share as well. As I ponder on this, I realize that, oh, he asked I not mention his name, so we'll call him Mr. G. I realize that Mr. G is back to making me look slow. Damn it, I better refocus for a minute, so at least I'll have a pile of crab halves while I switch buggies. I'll power through here, and that will give me time for the buggy switch. Buggies. Dune buggies. Hey, maybe when this is over, Daisy and I will look into a trip down the Oregon coast, and I'm Jeb Marl, lifetime fisherman, first-time canneryman. Thank you for listening.
This commentary submitted by Jeb Morrow. KFSK encourages the public expression of personal opinions, ideas, and creative works. Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. To view our open airwaves policy, go to our website, kfsk.org. For more information, call General Manager Tom Abbott, 772-3808. For local news, I'm Joe Vicnicki.